case of the day is 10-2760 Erlen Bueso Avila versus Eric Holder. And I'm not sure, I think you were here, but I'm not sure you were in the courtroom when we explained that the lights are not working. Oh, you were here. Oh, great. Okay, so you know that we have this whole new system. You know, we're saving money on everything in the federal judiciary. So now we're using construction paper instead of electricity. Okay. Good morning, Mr. Shaw.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I represent Petitioner Erlen Bueso Avila in this petition to review the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, in which it decided that Mr. Bueso Avila did not establish a nexus between the attacks on him by the MS-13 street gang and his participation in an evangelical church group or his religion. And really the heart of Mr. Bueso Avila's petition to this court is exemplified by the BIA's own finding in its first decision, in which it stated that that the motivation of the MS-13 in targeting Mr. Bueso Avila and the other members of his church group was to eliminate them, and this is a direct quote from page 147 of the record, as competitors to the recruitment of potential gang members. And the BIA then restated that same finding on the next page when it said that the evidence in the record showed that the MS-13 was motivated to eliminate him, meaning Mr. Bueso Avila, as a competitor for other potential gang members. Now, this finding of the BIA, which is fully supported and compelled by the evidence in the record, compels the conclusion that Mr. Bueso Avila was attacked on account of his membership in this church group and his religion.
Was he competing for, competition from other gangs that might recruit?
In the recruitment of potential gang members, Your Honor.
Or is he competing with other gangs to recruit youth?
I'm sorry?
Does the gang, 13, whatever it is, competing with other gangs to get members?
I believe they were, although in the record it's unclear. Mr. Bueso Avila testifies that the MS-13 controlled this neighborhood in which he lived, in which he proselytized.
Let me follow up on my brother's question. Is there any... If a gang persecutes any group that tries to recruit others away from themselves or from the general pool of available members, whether the other recruiters are religious groups, competing gangs, Boy Scouts, etc., how would we say that the persecution is on account of religion? I mean, doesn't the record demonstrate that MS-13 persecutes anyone who interferes with their recruiting efforts? And why wouldn't that be a generalized societal problem as opposed to religious persecution?
So this court has stated in the case of Tapiera de Oriella that the fact that there might be other persecuted groups or even persecuted people does not mean that a particular group is not eligible for asylum. Instead, it must be an individualized determination based on the facts of each group. And it's important to recognize that Mr. Bueso Avila has two claims, two bases here. One is his particular social group claim, which is his membership in this church group. And there it's very straightforward that the BIA stated that the motivation of the gang was to eliminate this group. And Mr. Bueso Avila was a member of this group, and so therefore he was attacked on account of his membership in the group. And to get to your Honor's question more directly, the religion portion, the BIA established the BIA found that the MS-13's motivation was to eliminate him as a competitor. And the reason why he was a competitor was because he engaged in the act of proselytizing. And the act of proselytizing was compelled by his religion. And so therefore, Mr. Bueso Avila was attacked on account of his religion. And this conclusion is supported by this court's decision in Martinez-Buendia. There, the court made clear that if what you're doing that gets you attacked or gets you targeted by a persecutor is because of a protected ground, then it stands to reason that you're being persecuted on that protected ground. And the quote from Martinez-Buendia is actually, "If political opinion is the reason an individual refuses to cooperate with a guerrilla group, and that individual is persecuted for his refusal to cooperate, logic dictates that the persecution is on account of the individual's political opinion." And so keeping the same reasoning, but applying the facts of Mr. Boisavala's case, proselytizing, or the reason why he was proselytizing was because of his religion. And it was because of his proselytizing that the gang targeted him. And so logic dictates that the targeting and the attacks were on account of his religion. The BIA never analyzed its finding that the motivation of MS-13 was to eliminate Mr. Boisavala and his church group as a competitor in the context of Mr. Boisavala's particular social group claim. And although it did analyze it in the context of his religion claim, its reasoning there is faulty. It states that that because the motivation of the gang was to eliminate the group as a competitor, the motivation was not to suppress its religion or the religious practice. But that doesn't logically follow, because as I just explained, the very reason why the group was a competitor was because of the religious practice of proselytizing. And it was that religious act that the gang was trying to suppress and eliminate.
Was that competing with the gang's purposes because they did everything bad? And I guess this religious group was trying to be good? I don't get the competition part, frankly.
Well, so Mr. Boisavala testified that their proselytizing message was trying to invite people to come into their group, to come away from the bad. Mr. Boisavala testified that they were trying to convince people to come away from the stealing, the killing, the drugs that the gang was involved in, and come towards the good.
Is there anything discussion about them trying to recruit or evangelize the M13 members?
No, Your Honor. The gang would actually see them out proselytizing to others, and Mr. Boisavala suggested that while they tried to avoid the gangs, which they could recognize because of the tattoos that the gang's members usually had, the gang would still come and harass them while they were out proselytizing.
Well, of course, by being in the neighborhoods and proselytizing, I can't pronounce that word very well, but they are exposing themselves as being out in the street as opposed to staying at home. That seems to be their distinction among others, young people in the neighborhood. I read also that the gang actually recruited or coerced or something two of the evangelicals?
That's correct. The gang actually targeted the group as a whole and
easy
were successful.
Target, kind of, looks like to me.
I'm sorry?
Kind of an easy target. They're out in the street, whatever they're doing,
right,
pushing stuff out, and they don't have to look very hard trying them. So.
Right, and it's important to remember that there are two grounds, and so the particular social group ground, all that is required for the nexus requirement is that the gang targeted him because of he was a member of this group. On the religion ground, the reason why they were out and about and proselytizing was because their religion compelled them to do so, and the asylum applicant shouldn't be required to choose between withstanding these attacks of the gang or giving up their religious devotion, their religious practice.
Let's set aside for the moment, if we might, whether the BIA erred in concluding that the persecution, was not on account of religion, because the IJ also found that he failed to show that the Honduran government was unable or unwilling to protect him and that he had no reasonable fear of future persecution because no one was harassing his family after they moved. And I understand, that his family was Catholic and he is an evangelical Christian. But did you preserve a challenge to either of those holdings? In other words, why aren't those alternate reasons for denying the claim not fatal to the appeal?
So we did reserve those challenges before the BIA. The BIA's opinion on remand from this court only decided the nexus issue. And so under the Supreme Court's case of the Ventura case, the only thing that's probably before this court is the issue of nexus, of whether these attacks were on account of his membership in his church group or his religion. And so if this court were to find that the BIA did indeed err in not establishing that nexus, or not finding that nexus established, then the proper recourse would be to remand back to the BIA for the BIA to find the other two elements, which are whether these attacks really did amount to persecution and whether the persecution was by a group that the government could not or would not control.
So the state action part would have to be on remand, whether some acquiescence or something.
Correct, the BIA would have to determine whether the Honduran government was unable to control this. And then once Mr. Boyce-Level establishes those elements, then he's established past persecution, and there becomes a rebuttable presumption that he has a reasonable fear of future persecution that the government then has to try and rebut by showing changes in the country or other changes. Really quickly, I just want to touch on we focused on the BIA's finding that we believe that we contend compels the conclusion that there is a nexus here. That finding was not made out of whole cloth. Instead, it's fully supported by the testimony of Mr. Boyce-Avila. And importantly, there's no issue here as to the credibility of Mr. Boyce-Avila. The immigration judge found that he was credible, and the BIA restated that conclusion. And this court has explained that the credible testimony of an alien is generally sufficient to bear his burden. And here, the testimony of Mr. Boyce-Avila is very clear and consistent. He testified that he was never bothered by the gang before he joined this group. When asked why the gang targeted him, he consistently and credibly testified that it was because of the group's proselytizing efforts, that they were trying to take these other members away from the good, away from the bad things that the gang was doing, and towards a good life. And he testified that the MS-13 would see them out proselytizing with their Bibles and would harass them as they were doing that. The MS-13 would actually wait outside be standing outside of the yards where this group met as they were meeting, and would at times stage fights in the streets, presumably, I suppose, to disrupt the meetings that were going on inside. Mr. Boyce-Avila testified that the gang waited not just for him, but for other members of the church group, and attacked them as they were coming out of the meeting. And so these are just some of the testimony that Mr. Boyce-Avila has given, and the rest we've set forth in our brief, which compels the conclusion that he is that he was persecuted on account of, or he was attacked on account of his membership in a particular social group and his religion. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I don't know how much there is.
2 minutes.
Two minutes left. Hello. Now, do I refer to you as Hofberg Phillips or Phillips?
Whichever you prefer.
I like Hofberg Phillips.
Yes. May it please the court, Rebecca Hofberg Phillips on behalf of the United States Attorney General. The court should deny this petition for review because the record does not compel reversal of the board's decision that the petitioner failed to show that he would be persecuted on account of a protected ground.
Well, now, you know, the BIA seemed to concede that the gang was trying to eliminate the competition for recruiting. And the IJ and the BIA both seem to accept that recruiting through proselytizing is a central tenet of Mr. Boyce-Avila's religion. You're trying to suppress an activity that is central to a person's religion. How can we say that it's not persecution on account of religion? I've been wondering if your argument would change if he had been praying loudly whenever the gang approached a potential recruit, and then gang members would just, you know, beat him senseless to make him be quiet so that their recruit could hear them. Would the government argue that they would have to beat anyone making noise, and so it's not religious persecution?
You brought up several points. I'm going to try to get to all of them. First of all, you're right in saying that it is very fact-dependent on what actually took place during these attacks. And you brought up an excellent point, which is that nothing was said about the preaching or the proselytizing in those encounters. There were actually four encounters that he had with them in the record.
And but you're not going to say that they didn't know that, you know, he's this religious person.
Well,
running around with all these other religious persons?
He was only targeted when he was by himself, first of all. He was never with anyone else.
Well, but they had seen him with all of these other people. We know that.
He says that they saw him and the other people when they were meeting outside, apparently. He also says they were fighting in the street during that time. They may or may not have been paying attention. The point is that he claims that they understood who they were. That's fine. What he doesn't show is that because of who they were, that's why they were targeted. And this is the key difference. Because what they saw were young males, or maybe also females in the group, but him himself was a young male who was targeted when he was by himself. And although there was evidence that he may have been going to or from the meeting, there's no evidence that they actually, first of all, would have known that he just came from the meeting, considering that in his affidavit he said it was 10 minutes after he was already down the road from his meeting.
Does it matter if he's just coming from the meeting or going to the meeting, if he is a member of this group? I don't think so.
It matters what they perceived or what their motivation was in targeting him. And as you said, if let's say they had taken his Bible away from him, let's say they had said, you must abandon your faith, or they had said something along the lines to show that the reason why they were approaching him was to make him abandon his religion. Even though you pointed out before that they may have had the effect of the proselytizing group being able to not exercise their proselytizing, and that was the effect of what the gang did, that wasn't their motive in attacking them or confronting them. The motive that they had was to recruit them. And this is obvious based on his affidavit in which he specifically says that they said, I think the MS members didn't like that we were a group of young people doing good things. They said, what are you doing? You have to join our gang. What are you doing? Not showing a really full understanding of what are they doing. They want him to join the gang. They also said the gang wanted everyone from our group to join, but to get more power and to get more people to do what they were doing. This is the motivation behind it. Furthermore, in his testimony, that was his affidavit, he said they wanted them to join them. This is on page 280. Told me if I did not join that they would harm me. And when I told them no, that I wasn't going to do it, that's when they started beating me. So it's the specific encounters and his specific information that indicates what the motive was behind them. Now, I have to point out that what opposing counsel largely focused on was the board's prior decision in this case, in terms of it being a competitor group. And I have to point out several things about that. First of all, that's not the decision that there is a petition for review from now. That was the board's June 30th, 2009 decision. The petition for review is from the July 6th, 2010 decision. Okay. Now, the board's prior decision did note in the context of evaluating the religious part of the claim, which he points out doesn't make much sense in terms of looking at the group because it was a separate group versus religion claim. But what the board first found in the prior decision, if this court is going to accept counsel's claim that it should look at it, was the threats from the gang members reflect that they were attacking him for his failure to join the gang. That is first and foremost, and that is what the board has consistently held in its next decision. What it did say was, assuming that he came to the attention of the street gang due to his activity with the group, especially in light of the statements attributed to the gang members, it shows that they were targeted as potential gang members or as competitors to the recruitment of potential gang members. And then the board says, that is, the motivation was to eliminate a competitor and not to suppress the respondents' religious beliefs. Later, the board said the gang was motivated by a desire to recruit the respondent and or eliminate him as a competitor. This is crucial because it's an individual, not a group, that the board was looking at. And also in that decision, the board didn't decide whether it was a particular social group. And he keeps saying the board found that he was targeted on account of a social group. The board never found that. The board found the social group in that decision, did not adopt its prior social group finding after the remand, which is why that decision is not the one under review before this court right now. So it's important to look at the reasons why the decision that is under review, the board found simply this falls under Elias Zacharias, and that is entirely consistent with the evidence in the record that the only central reason for recruiting the respondent was a recruitment reason.
What about his two cohorts who were also part of this proselytizing group who have now left been frightened into joining MS-13?
Your Honor, there's no evidence that those people were targeted either together or when they were with the group. These, again, could have very well been individual targeting, just like him.
I almost feel as if you're arguing that he isn't this religious person.
Well,
and that they aren't these religious persons. I'm getting a bad feeling about it.
No. The government does not dispute that they are religious persons. The government disputes that they were not targeted because they were religious persons. They were targeted because the gang wanted more members. That is pretty much the primary gang of the MS-13. Increase their ranks, make them more powerful, and that is the central motivation behind it. And that's what this court is looking at as a post-Real ID Act case as a central reason. The only central reason was for recruitment. It was his burden to show that there was another central reason behind it, and he failed to do that.
His first encounter occurs after he's leaving the church meeting.
Mm-hmm.
The second encounter occurs after a church meeting.
It does. However, this is the circumstantial evidence. He wants the court to draw an inference, just like the way he wanted the judge to draw an inference.
To be perfectly honest with you.
Well, it's an inference nonetheless, and this court's standard of review is a different story. The IJ didn't accept that inference. He came to a different conclusion and said that the circumstantial evidence supports the inference of recruitment. This court is not entitled to simply disagree. It has to find that it compels reversal.
Wait until you see the opinion. What do you mean this court is not entitled? We are only entitled to agree with this IJ?
I'm sorry. What I meant to say is that the standard of review is not to simply disagree. It's the record compels reversal of the agency's decision. This court can certainly disagree in terms of the standard of review is what I meant, is that I apologize if I misspoke. This court can certainly disagree, but to overturn the agency's decision on the standard of review of substantial evidence and compelling evidence, the court must find that the record compels and that it must be reversed.
Now, are you arguing that the IJ and the BIA do not accept that recruiting through proselytizing is a central tenet of his religion?
They very well seem to accept that. He is an evangelical Christian, a proselytizing. They accept that. Nobody disputes that, and nobody disputes the mission of evangelical Christians in terms of their proselytizing effort.
So if you're trying to suppress an activity that's central to a person's religion, how can we say that it's not persecution on account of religion? I'm really having a problem.
It all comes back to the motivation of the persecutors, and that's what Elias Zacharias was focusing on. It's the motivation.
And that's why we have to look at the circumstantial evidence here, because we can't get into M13 members' heads, much as we might wish to.
You're correct, Your Honor. The only thing that we can look at is the evidence surrounding the encounters. And the thing is, it's more like, as I said, the absence of some of the evidence that could have been shown in this case. For example, he tries to say that they targeted him as he was proselytizing. And he says this several times in his reply brief, that it was as he was proselytizing.
He's leaving the meeting.
Well, but he wasn't talking to anyone at that time. He wasn't expressing his religious viewpoint whatsoever.
So you have to be expressing your religious viewpoint at the time.
Well, you just have to.
I asked you that question earlier, and you know.
Oh well, you don't. What
you changed your position.
I apologize, but I guess what I'm trying to convey is that they had to have, they had to somehow show in the record, or he had to show, that the reason why they targeted him was because of his membership in a social group or religion, which would both be protected grounds. I think the best way of perhaps looking at your question, and this is something that the Ninth Circuit said in its post-Real ID Parasumova case, is that a motive is a central reason if that motive standing, you know, would have led the persecutor to harm the applicant. But if you took that motive away, would the person still be targeted? If you took away the fact that he was in the group or that he was a Christian, let's take that away for a minute. Would they still have targeted him? Yes. Yes, they would have, because they wanted more young males in their group. So
that we know from circumstantial evidence.
Well,
that we
yes.
know, but we don't know everything else we've discussed.
Well, he was targeted at another time when he wasn't going to or from a meeting.
No, but they knew him by then, I should think.
Well, they knew him as a young male in the area who they saw on
the
streets.
Well, they knew him as someone who was, you know, leaving these church meetings.
They did recognize him as someone on the streets. There was actually a 10-minute lag, according to his affidavit on page 321. He left the meeting, he said he left the meeting. They'd been meeting in the house, which, you know, the fact that they were inside, apparently they were inside the house, but then another time he said they were outside where they were visible to the gang, so that was a different statement there. But then he says, I was about 10 minutes down the road when I saw them waiting for me in the street. So again, there's a little bit, it is circumstantial evidence, and he was asking the immigration judge to draw that inference that I was discussing earlier, and the immigration judge chose not to draw that inference and to find that it was recruitment. And this is very much in line with
this. You know that in the law we tell juries that circumstantial evidence is to be given every bit as much weight as any other evidence. You know that, don't you?
Yes, it can certainly be given weight, and that's often what it is in these cases, because you're trying to show the circumstances surrounding what happened. And that's why I brought up the standard of review, because sometimes, I just mean that sometimes you can come to different opinions about things, and that's what he was asking the IJ to do.
I am going to talk to you about something else for just a minute, mm-hmm. because I need to ask you whether you have any authority, case law or otherwise, for the idea that amici are required to exhaust their arguments below before filing briefs on appeal. Because that just seems entirely contrary to how we use amicus briefs on appeal. In other words, if we required amici to file briefs below before being allowed to file up here, there would be virtually no way for amici to comply. They don't know until a claim has been denied and appealed that their information is even needed to assist the court. And I'm wondering if the government believes that amici are supposed to file briefs in every immigration case that appeals to the BIA, just in case.
If I may answer your question. This case actually is a slightly different circumstance, because you have an amici group actually is filing something before the board in this case. The UNHCR did make a filing to the board the first time and then didn't make those arguments that it now wants to make. So this is a case where, you know, I understand your concern, should we require them to go before the board, but they did go before the board. They just didn't make the arguments that they're now making. And so that's why the government argued that the exhaustion doctrine would apply in a case like this. Now, there was a second Amici, the National Association, and that particular organization did not file anything before the board and then filed something before this court for the first time. And, Your Honors, if you do want to accept that...
No. Voice-O-Avelia did raise the issue below. The IJ and the BIA had full opportunities to address the claim that proselytizing and recruiting are central to his religion and were also central to the gang's reason for persecuting him. And what I'm trying to say to you that we need to clarify, I guess, that Amici are not required to exhaust their arguments before a case is appealed, because that's the feeling I got. I don't know what my brothers got from all that.
Well, it's about giving the board the opportunity to rule in the first instance in a case. And
well,
so,
they did. These arguments were all raised down there.
Well, they weren't in the sense that they were trying to bring in international conventions and other considerations outside, which we argued in the alternative shouldn't be given weight anyway. But the fact is, when you're trying to get these outside considerations, the agency should have the first opportunity. These were the entirely new set of arguments, especially the National Association was trying to say the key issue should not be the intentions of the gang to persecute, but the effect of the gang's actions, which goes very contrary to what the immigration law says about motivation being central.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now you have how much? 2 minutes, you said earlier.
Thank you, Your Honors. To emphasize that what Your Honors have stated is correct, that there is no requirement that Mr. Boyce-Avila establish a nexus through direct evidence. The Supreme Court in Elias Zacharias is very clear that that can be made through either direct or circumstantial evidence. And the BIA's own decision, In re JBN and SM, they state that to establish nexus, a petitioner must show, either through direct or circumstantial evidence, evidence from which it would be reasonable to believe that the harm complained of was a protected ground. And so the petitioner is also entitled to the reasonable inferences that can be drawn from circumstantial evidence.
But there are other people in this gang? They're all, I guess, relatively young?
So the evidence in the record suggests that the average age of the gangs is 13 to 23. However, there's also evidence in the record that they can also be older.
Well, I'm trying to look at it. If someone... I guess I'd make a comparison. I look at this as the people are on the street and they're recruitable, they're obvious, they're young. Apparently, that there's not a lot of other criteria, unless there is some evidence that they, for some reason, want to recruit these evangelicals. By comparison, if there's a church and they stand outside the church and watch any young people that come out and grab them, as opposed to a pool hall, and they don't grab young people coming out of the pool.
Because they're carrying cues.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, because the way the government's argument is that they're not really concerned about whether they're coming out of a pool hall or a church. They're more concerned about their just being young and available.
So the BIA's, that's why the BIA's finding here, we think, compels, really moves this case along, and that is that the motivation of MS-13 was to eliminate Mr. Boyce-Avila because they were competitors in their proselytizing. And that's based on the circumstantial evidence that Mr. Boyce-Avila...
Not competitors of other gangs.
Competitors in the recruitment process, that their proselytizing message...
Who are you competing with?
With MS-13.
I mean, who are they? Who is the gang competing with?
The church group.
That's it. Is that the only other youth in town? Are you the only one then?
Well, that's the only other group in the record that we know about.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
If you had something more to add, I'm going to allow you to, because I did give, your opponent.
Certainly. So
a minute and a half more.
So I just want to emphasize again that that there are two bases here: the particular social group claim and the religion claim. And the government has consistently said, there has to be religious animus, there has to be religious animus. Well, that doesn't matter in a particular social group claim. And so the BIA is finding that that he was trying to eliminate, that the MS-13 was trying to eliminate Mr. Boyce-Avila and his church group. that should satisfy the particular social group nexus requirement. And as to the government's argument about that was from the BIA's first opinion, so those findings were made in the BIA's analysis of the religion claim. The remand from this court was for the BIA to reconsider its particular social group analysis. So the BIA should be stuck with those findings that it made in the religion portion of its decision. And moreover, what the BIA says is the evidence in the record shows, and the record didn't change between the first opinion and the second opinion. It hasn't changed between the first opinion and now. And so what the evidence shows can't have changed. Or if it did, then the BIA should at the very least be required to explain that in order to have a reasonably supported decision, which is what this court has required of them.
Are you saying the religion issue was decided in the first for remand?
It was, yes.
Well, did they say that they were recruiting because of religion?
No, they said that that the issue was, or the motivation was to eliminate a competitor, and not to suppress his religion. But as I've explained, that doesn't logically follow, because the reason why they were a competitor was because they engaged in the act of proselytizing, which was religiously compelled. And so therefore the gang really was motivated to suppress this religious act of proselytizing.
Mr. Scholl, I cannot tell, because your name is not on the brief, if you were appointed. Were you appointed?
No, Your Honor.
No. Okay. Well, I thank you anyway, and I thank you as well. Thank you, Ms. Hofberg Phillips. Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement. We will go on to case number...